This podcast is supported by Luminary's The Midnight Miracle. Talib Kweli and Yasiin Bey, together known as Black Star, and Dave Chappelle invite you to listen to a podcast like you've never heard before. An audio variety show, The Midnight Miracle, a new Luminary original podcast, combines insightful conversations with comedy sketches, archival audio clips, and a powerful soundtrack. Aretha Franklin, Nina Simone, Amy Winehouse, Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, Stevie Wonder, new world premiere Black Star music, and more. Subscribe to Luminary to listen now to The Midnight Miracle.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your The Difference Is Now It's By Choice of music, news, and criticism. I am your host, John Caramonica.
I said, you know what I'm here for.
Back on top, punching the clock, clutching sanity. I got more cribs than Habitat for Humanity. Profound, we propagating more profanity. Paid our collections for recollections of calamity.
It may be the off season for J. Cole, but it is always on in season on Popcast. We do not stop. We do not rest. We don't take time off. At the top, we were listening to Punching the Clock. We're talking about J. Cole's The Offseason. Yo Phillips is here. You know Yo's writing. Was at DJ Booth for a long time. Is now working on a project called Rap Portraits, which is a behind-the-scenes documentary series. Check that out. Yo, hello. Welcome.
What's up, John? How you doing?
I am blessed. It's been a long time coming. We've had you in bits and pieces on Popcast before, but you know, we're in the full flower on this episode. I'm excited to have you to talk about Cole. We've been chatting a little bit offline about this Cole record. I have a theory.
Okay.
I have an idea that I need to like bounce off you right off the rip. Okay?
Let's go.
Okay. When you think about the animating tension in J. Cole's career, pivoting from the kind of attempted mainstream crossover era into the Forest Hills Drive, For Your Eyes Only era. It's this idea that he tried to do things the way either others were doing them or others expected him to do. Sort of succeeded, maybe didn't totally succeed, but the key thing is it didn't feel good for him to do those things. And so at some point in the mid-2010s, he takes this pivot, reclaims the narrative, and says, I'm going to do things my way. And that starts with Forest Hills and moves forward from there. There is, however, I believe, another pivot. And that pivot starts around KOD, and I think maybe is in full flower on the off season. And what that pivot is, no longer is J. Cole trying to make records that either sound like the popular records of the day or are in the same vein as other popular rappers. What he's doing on the off season is saying, I'm going to make a J. Cole record and bring other people into my space. And that is in and of itself proving a point. The fact that I can get 21 Savage on a Cole record, not on a 21 Savage type record, but on a Cole type record. The fact that Lil Baby is on a Cole type record. The fact that there is a Cameron intro on a Cole type record. That is like the next level of flex or stunt or statement of purpose beyond what happened in like 2015, which is this kind of like wholesale rejection of Cole attempting to remold himself. This is what's been on my mind as I've been listening to the offseason. The idea that he's reached whatever, I don't want to say final form, but he's reached some form, which then now creates a space for other people to come in to his territory on his terms. I know you listen closely to this record. Tell me what you think. Tell me where you're at on that.
One thing about J. Cole that I think needs to be acknowledged is how he came into the game without a single. Like, he signed a record deal before anyone knew who he was. So unlike Drake, who caught Best I Ever Had, and boom, he's already on the charts. He's already on the radio. J. Cole comes in and he's like, I'm a mixtape rapper. And now I have to drop a single to release my album. That was the big thing about Cole. You need a single. You need a single. Without a single, you can't drop. And that says a lot about where the music industry was at the time. Sales were declining. And that if you were an artist, you needed to be radio. You need it to be on the charts.
And so, also a lack of understanding at that time of just how powerful the internet was and how ultimately Cole would not need, Cole and plenty of other artists would not need singles. But this was still that tension where I think people who were living on the internet at that time understood that you don't need a single, but people who were working at record labels didn't yet catch up.
So imagine the mentality of the artist having to conform because I'm just trying to get my album out. So Cole went through two albums of conforming, of trying to craft these major label albums, like what a major label album had to be to get released, right? So he goes from there to Forest Hills Drive, where we're getting ready to get into streaming. The whole industry is changing. Cole is selling well. So now I don't have to be that kind of major label artist. And I believe that transformation is how we got here. Coming to terms with, I can make the rules now. I can decide what my rap is, what my hip hop is, what it sounds like, who's a part of it. Like, I'm in complete control. That is a flex, because not a lot of artists have complete control at this level to make the record you want to make with who you want to make it with. That's not common. That's very rare. So I believe that the offseason does represent like J. Cole becoming J. Cole. This is the rapper, like, and the superstar version of J. Cole, not the Forest Hills Drive. I'm anti-Hollywood. I'm anti-celebrity. Like, this is me stepping all the way into it. So I'm rapping with other rappers. I got Cameron on my intro. And plus, it's like, there's this East Coast aspect to it too, right? He's deciding that, you know, the New York City style of rap, the East Coast style of rap, that's my rap. So I'm going to make that kind of album. And I'm gonna take it back to the fundamentals. I'm going to decide, like, everything that he decides, all the decisions that he makes is very impressive to me, because a lot of rappers aren't able to make these choices.
I have two words for you: lyricist lounge. I have two more words for you: raucous records.
Yes, sir.
There were so many moments when I was listening to this album where I was like, if you had told me that this was like a 12-inch on Raucous in 1998 and I just never heard it in its day, I would totally believe you. Totally, totally credible. Because his understanding of hip-hop, you know, Cole's a student. His understanding of hip-hop is very historically minded, very historically informed by that era and by the things that that era valorized, which is to say lyricism, narrative. You made a point in your piece about bar for bar, which is something that, like, you know, in the 90s, we used to sort of take for granted. We'd be like, everybody wants to go bar for bar. And of course, it turned out that was not, in fact, the case over the years. And Cole seems to be going through this kind of like molting process of like being upset about that, then kind of like giving into that. I think you see that on KOD a little bit, where there's that tension of like, yeah, I can kind of get a SoundCloud rap flow off if I need to. And then on this album, finally just being like, out of hell with it. I'm just going to do me. And if people want to come to my party, they're welcome to come to my party. But I am no longer interested in the other people's parties.
Absolutely. And that's the thing about Cole. He's from the South. So this is a Southern rapper who looked up to New York, who looked up to the East Coast. So even though he has the 21 Savages and the Little Babies, the element that he brings them into is more East Coast leaning. It's the soul samples. I was thinking Baseline when I hear this album. Like, this is the album with Jay-Z, Blueprint, like, you got Bink, you got Kanye, you got Just Blaze, and I'm just in the studio knocking out records. Like, that's how I felt with this Cole album. Like, he wanted to make a statement. He wanted people to see him as a rapper's rapper, but not just any kind of rapper, a very specific classic kind of rapper. And again, I respect that so much, because you don't have to be that rapper no more. That's a choice. That's a very specific choice you have to make these days.
I'll tell you something. The first time I ever saw Cole perform, he was doing a mixtape release show. I think it was at Roseland Ballroom here in New York, when that venue still existed. And I remember at the time thinking, huh, that's a big venue for a guy who doesn't have a real major label album out. Or maybe this was for his major label debut. It was right in that early 2011, 2012 period, I think. And I was stupefied by how many people were there, number one. And also, I'm looking around and I'm like, this audience, this is a Cole-specific audience. I don't know if this audience is at other shows that I'm going to. I don't know if they're at other, whether it's Southern rapper shows or grimier shows or whatnot. I don't know if this audience is there. So it was very clear from that early phase that there were people who were signing on for the mythology of J. Cole. That's what they were buying into right off rip. When you think about the early Cole era, what do you think people were gravitating to in him during those earliest, even pre-crossover, quote-unquote, attempt years, like mixtape era? What do you think people were gravitating to in him?
Well, I can speak on that because I was one of those people who was downloading mixtapes off that piff. So Cole, the warm-up, was the mixtape where he announces his deal with Roc Nation, but it's such a just a rap record. And that's what I was gravitating toward because I'm like, whoa, this is a guy who I've never heard of, I've never seen before. He's not on the radio, but he seems to have something. There's a spark here. There's a passion here. And there's like a talent, a skill set that says, I could be one of those guys. So you got Wale coming up at this time. You got Kid Cudi coming up at this time. You got Drake. It's like all these interesting rappers. And they're all new and they're young. So with Cole, I believe a lot of people saw themselves in him. I believe he's a period artist. That he's an artist that every period of your life, you can kind of pinpoint where you heard J. Cole. So like if you're coming out of high school, going to college, and you hear the warm-up, you feel like you were Cole is. I want to get in the game. I'm trying to start my life. I'm here trying to follow a dream. So by the time you graduate, he's on like his major label debut. So now you feel like we're in the same place, right? You got your big album. I just got my diploma. I just graduated. Boom, boom, boom. So now think about going into your 30s, feeling like you got your life together, feeling like you know yourself, feeling like I'm proud of me for what I've achieved. This is the off season. I really believe as people get older and kind of get into that same mentality that he's in, you'll really appreciate what this record does because, again, I don't think it's a record you can make when you're in your early 20s.
So Cole is 36, and I agree. There is something about the comforts of middle age, with which I might know a little bit about. There is something about the comforts of middle age where what you say, in essence, are, I've made these choices. I'm comfortable with them. They shape how I view the world. And ultimately, it's not that I am inflexible necessarily, but I'm inviting people to come and witness how I view the world and be a part of how I view the world. And that's how I'm going to move forward, is by inviting more and more people into my worldview rather than me or Cole constantly gut checking, second guessing, third guessing, fourth guessing. Am I doing the right thing? Is this right? Do I want to be this kind of person? Cole seems very settled. I know what kind of person I am. And yes, if you, Cam, Lil Baby, whoever, want to come and rock with it, that's great. But you know what? If not, also, that's great.
I agree. I do. And that's the only thing that I sort of had a problem with the offseason. I wanted it to be more epic with the collaborations. I wanted Freddie Gibbs. I wanted Benny the Butcher. I wanted the rap revivalists who are doing the work too, who are right there with you. Like, I understand that Cole has the mentality of this is my party and I invite who I want to. But I feel like with the mentality that you have for this album, I need to see what happens when your sword crosses with another sword who's also in their off season.
And it's funny you say that, because I will say this is where the point proving comes back. Because I think for Cole, and again, this is speculative, I think for Cole, he thinks the expected thing is, of course, I'm going to rap with Benny. Of course, I'll rap with Freddie, you know, Gunn, whoever, because they do what I do. But I think Cole's flex is, you know what you don't think I'll do is Lil Baby. You know what you don't think I'll do is Cam. And so for him, there's a little bit of like, uh-huh, y'all didn't see that coming, right? Y'all didn't see that coming. So there's a little bit of that. Let's actually listen to a little bit of Pride is the Devil with Lil Baby.
Pride is the devil. Too much money to count. What's the amount? 10 of a bounce. I got a pen to add it up and pay somebody to make sure whatever amount he say, I'm bagging up. Got racks, I'm racks, I'm racking up. Stacking up. You're reaching or acting up. Break it down, weigh it up, not bag it up. Make a five of mine, that's regular.
On some level, I think Cole knows that this record will actually get played on the radio, which is not something that I think he's immune to, even at this place in his career. But I think this collaboration is maybe a little bit more, maybe even for people like me and you, just to be like, ah, y'all didn't see this one coming, huh? Well, watch me.
That record doesn't feel like a Lil Baby record. It doesn't. Even when Baby pops up, when he arrives, it's like a pass the baton kind of feature where he just picks up where Cole left off and he's
literally
just running
mid-verse.
Just running the little baby race all of a sudden. The beat doesn't change, but the energy changes immediately as soon as you hear baby. And just the fact that he worked pride into the verse, I thought like, whoa, okay. Like he's even taking this a little bit more seriously. Like he knows this isn't just a feature for anybody. This is a J. Cole feature. He has a theme. There's a message to this song. Let me contribute to that. It's a very interesting record in that regard.
I totally agree. And it's interesting that the fact that it didn't have those kind of sword moments was a negative for you. I don't know if I thought of it as like positive or negative, but I thought of it as like a careful decision. Like it's almost like there may be some Cole album in the future that's literally just the thing you're talking about. You know what I mean? It's like 10 tracks, all collaborations, all like, you know, steel sharpening steel. I can see that almost as like a creative exercise for him, but I feel like this album's creative exercise was more to be like, I'm gonna do some things you just did not think I was gonna do. And just to let you know, I have come so far circle that rather than me being stuck in the studio being like, how do I make a record that sounds like a Lil Baby record? What I'm doing is I'm making a song that sounds like a Cole record, and I'm big enough that I can get Lil Baby to come on that song and show up and show out. That's how it felt to me. It was different from KOD because KOD still felt anxious to me. You know, even like watching, like you remember when Cole sat down with Lil Pump to have yes. their conversation, right? It's like, it was a weird combination of like big bro, but also like trying to understand, like trying to get it. You know, it's like, I'm too big to do this, but also like, can you please explain to me what's happening? Some combination of those two things. And I think that was like some anxiety of kind of like, well, what does it mean to be one of the biggest rappers in the world, but also not fit into any current rap mode that other people are employing? And KOD felt like it was still reckoning with that. This album feels like much more peaceful in that regard. It's like, I'm just going to do me, like on the most kind of elemental level.
And that's such a mature mindset to have, I believe, because like you said, with KOD, the Lil Pump interview is a perfect metaphor for that album. It's two people who should not be together. They don't have anything in common. And Cole earnestly wants to understand. And KOD is an album that seems like, I get it. Let me show you I understand. And there's moments that it works, but there's also moments where you just feel like Cole, like you're pushing yourself in a direction that you don't want to be in.
To prove something to who, that's the thing that I can never quite get under the hood of, is who's that for? Is that for 20-year-old rap fans who are like, oh, J. Cole is corny, J. Cole is whack? Is that who that's for? Maybe. And if so, I can't think of a worse audience to gear a record towards. Why would you ever gear a record towards the people who are not on board?
Right. That's a great question. Who was KOD for? Because I know who this album was for. It's for people who've already been on board.
Yes.
Like, if you've been following Cole, this is your tape. Me and my older brother rediscovered Cole at the same time. And when he called me and was like, yo, this Cole album. Like, I knew. I was like, yeah. Like, it's for you. It's for you. It's for people who've been on. It's not attracting any new fans. And that's actually something that I think is a big flex itself. Because I remember when Drake was on the press run for Scorpion. And he was saying that I have to make songs my fan base. And my fan base is everybody. So I got to do R&B. I got to do rap. I got to do, you know, whatever. If we're doing Caribbean music, I'm doing Caribbean. Drake does everything. This album is Cole saying, like, I'm not doing everything. I'm doing what's important to me. And these is the drills. I want to do storytelling. I want to do metaphors. I want to do similes. I want to rap. And I rapped. So I get it. Like, I really appreciate the album for what it does because it makes a choice.
Although there are a couple songs, like 100 Mil, which is a little bit sing rap.
Yes. You didn't need it.
Kind of keep that. Or at least it feels like residue of that last era. What's a song on this album that really jumped out at you, that you really feel like nails the vision of it?
Honestly, man, I really love the intro. I really do. One, because Cam is a surprise. I wanted to jump on that point before. When I first heard Cam, I feel like the hairs on my arm stood up. Like, what is happening? Because never thought I associated Cameron and J. Cole ever in anything in life. So the fact that Cam's on here being Cam, he's not rapping, but like presence-wise, it has a presence. And then when Cole starts rapping, there's a presence. Like, he feels large. He feels like, I am the rapper. So just the way he's rapping is very precise. It's very straightforward. There's narrative, there's story, there's punchlines, there's bars. And even the stuff that people aren't super happy about, it's like, it sticks out. Like, there's so much that sticks out on this album.
Let's listen to a little bit of that intro. It's called 95 South.
Killer, it's the off season. Let's keep it tall. Y'all ain't f***ing with my man. And don't check your watch. You know the time. Cold World, Killer Cam. This is finish.
This too easy for me now. Cold been going plat since back when CDs was around. What you sold, I tripled debt. I can't believe these clowns.
And also worth mentioning, Cam's at the top, Lil Jon's on the backside.
Yes.
Another person who you don't necessarily is going to expect to pop up on a Cole record.
The idea of Cole being the middle child has always been about era, right? Like, I'm the middle between the classics and I'm the middle between like the SoundCloud rap. But I really think you're the middle between the North and the South.
Oh my God.
And 95 South really sets the tone for that. And I feel like that ebbs and flows throughout the entire record. Like, you are the middle between not only time, but regions.
That's a bar. That's a bar right there.
It's been on my mind, man. It's been on my mind.
Oh my God. I needed that. I needed that energy for this record. Oh my God.
You know, this record reminds me of the Carter 2. And the fact that, like, remember, the Carter 2 was an album everyone was like, oh, Wayne's hanging around Dipset. He's more up north leaning versus, like, the Carter, which was very southern. But Katrina hit, sending Wayne away. So now I feel like Wayne's idea of rap was the north. I want to be the best rapper alive, right? So I got to do what Jay-Z did. That's the way Wayne was thinking. I feel like Cole is in the same mindset.
That's absolutely right. And you know, Wayne understood, in order to be perceived globally as the best rapper alive, he was still early enough that you had to reckon with the influence of New York. I think if there was a 2021 equivalent, maybe that person wouldn't feel like they had to reckon with New York, because New York is so far in the rear view for so many people. But when Wayne arrived, he still very much had to reckon with the shadow and the burden of great New York rap. And I think that's right. In the Carter 2, in that era, that's the moment where he's sort of taking it all in and being like, I can play that game and this game and be the best at all of it.
Absolutely. 100%.
You listen to the LA Leakers freestyle?
Yes.
Ooh. All right, we got to listen to a little bit of the L.A. Leakers freestyle.
My only guess is that less is more. More or less, 100 G's in my dresser drawer. Ooh. I'm blessed, hope IRS don't arrest me for it. I'm new to it. My new crib got the Times Square view to it. While two lay in my bed, I'm used to it. That's your best friend giving me head. Now you do it. See, mommy, it's not so weird. After I hit, I cut you off like Picasso ear. Van Gogh.
If you watch that video, you know, Cole being like, I haven't done one of these in a while. Like, you know, this is exhausting. It's like, it's a lot of work, blah, blah, blah. But also, it's like, you could tell he prepared for that maybe even more than he prepared for this album.
Because he knew what it meant. That's the thing. Everything has meaning for this rollout. The Slam magazine, cover story, the freestyle, the album release, the timeline of things, perfect. Like, if I wanted to introduce like a new era of myself, this is how you do it. And I believe he knew I have to go do the freestyle because that's what rappers do. This is going up the flex, getting the bombs. And I love that he did LA Leakers because that's blog era. That's the blog period. And he knew where he comes from. Everything's very pointed. Everything.
He's so well suited to that particular task. And he chooses beats that I think you certainly, I mean, obviously not Still Tippin', but 93 Till Infinity, that maybe someone would have rapped over in 1998 in that era. You know, like if he was on a Clue tape or something, or a Kid Capri tape or whatever, he might have picked that beat in 98 or 90. Hell, he might have a old freestyle sitting on a SoundCloud somewhere. You know what I mean?
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised. And that once again goes into like the middle child, East Coast and the South.
And that's where Still Tippin' comes in.
He understands who he is and like what he represents. And I think even on A Forest Hills Drive, he talks about being like New York's finest. Even if you think about the whole Diddy, J. Cole, the night that it happened, Kendrick is the one that said he's the king of New York on Control. Like, New York is still, like, in certain artists' minds, the place to get the crown. To do a classic beat like that, something that comes from, like, that 90s era, that Dusty, that boom bap era, he's trying to prove a point. And then he does a Still tip, and it's like, I can do this too.
I also want to emphasize something with the New York narrative. I want to listen to a little bit. You mentioned Puff. Let's listen to a little bit of Let Go My Hand.
Soldiers, some marching on, hoping
Hi, I'm Dan Jones.
And I'm Mia Lee, and we are the editors of Modern Love at the New York Times and co-hosts of the Modern Love podcast.
We read love stories for a living.
And by love stories, we mean essays written by real people about all forms of human connection.
We're talking about everything from first dates to funerals, from sibling rivalries to new love at 85.
On our show, we're going to bring those stories to life. We'll hear from the writers and also from the people who are written about.
Relationships are the most important things in our lives. And the people that tell us their stories are just so brave, like way braver than I think I am most of the time.
Yeah. They're so honest and so vulnerable. And listening to the stories, I feel like you absorb so much wisdom and you get a sense that you're not alone.
You can follow Modern Love wherever you get your podcasts, so you'll never miss an episode.
We hope you'll join us. New episodes are out every Wednesday.
The thing that's striking to me about Let Go My Hand, thematically, and it's something that pops up maybe in two or three other places on the record. You know, you think about the classic thinking about Nas, which is there were some people who were out on the corner and then there was Nas watching people from the window telling the stories. No speculation about the degree of truth of any of that, just talking about the popular narratives of how people understood Nas, certainly in the 90s and even into the 2000s. Let Go My Hand, over and over again, Cole is talking about not being tough, not scrapping, or even potentially getting into something and feeling a little out of his depth in those kind of situations. And I couldn't help but think, on some level, whether conscious or subconscious, it's a callback to classic mid-90s New York rap storytelling, which obviously had a tremendous amount of detail, street corner level detail, but some of the best stuff of that era was often perceived as being one step removed from that, which is to say observational rather than participatory. It doesn't speak of itself as observational. It just is perceived that way. What Cole does is he takes that notion of observation, of distance, and bakes it into the rhymes themselves. He actually talks about the distance between him and the tough stuff that's happening right in front of him or right next to him or right around him. And I thought that was very striking that he kept returning to that theme over and over again. Because if you're really going to nail your narrative, if you're really going to reframe your narrative, you want to do it with no affectation whatsoever. And part of doing that is to strip yourself free of all these burdens of like, I did this, I did that. It's okay, Cole is saying, to be like, I watched this. I didn't do this. I couldn't do this. I wouldn't do that. That's just as powerful.
It's like undressing. He strips himself down completely.
Read these lyrics. Like, you read these lyrics. Like, I just read them as text, you know, separate from the album. And I was struck at how much that popped up in the songs.
I love how conversational it is. Again, like, I think every verse on this album understands what it's supposed to do. And just the way he talks us through how he found the beat and just like unearthing all of these feelings. And there's older Cole songs where he talks about scraps and fights and things of that nature. But this is where he gets very candid about those experiences. And he draws you in so close to him where you can kind of feel the chaos a bit of like how it feels to be a teenager. And you're in those situations where you're selling wolf tickets and you're kind of hoping like, man, I hope I don't have to be in this situation. And now, boom, next thing you know, you're fighting or you're not fighting. Like, Cole's great at pinpointing where in your life you feel like there were crossroads, where anything could happen. A Tale of the Twin Cities is from Forest Hills Drive, where he talks about just like being in this city where all of this chaos is happening. And by the third verse, he's the one asking to take your watch. You know, like, it's very transformative the way he sets up these narratives. And you kind of like, you begin at one place and you end up somewhere that you're pretty surprised by. That's what I was surprised to hear him mention the P. Diddy scrap. I always thought that was like some crazy internet lore about like that GQ night, because it's like, what happened? How did J. Cole and Diddy, of all people, end up doing anything? My personal favorite thing about the song is where he talks about Diddy being his favorite rapper. Again, like, it pinpoints like what he's watching, who he's influenced by, and how that album, such a an East Coast classic is the type of album he's playing as a seventh grader. You know, like he really grew up on this music, and now he's fighting Diddy at a party. Like that's also Cole's thing. Like Cole's experience in the industry is not what he imagined. He was a dreamer. Like he dreamed about this life. At every corner, they showed him that it wasn't what you thought it was going to be.
I mean, the man literally has a song called "Let Nas Down."
It's such a bad idea.
To be fair, who among us has not let Nas down?
I feel like we all have, but how much has Nas let us down is the question. Come on. You're God's son. How much did you let the people down, sir? That's my thing. And I love Nas, but like seriously, like the fact that Cole had to make that song speaks so much to just the pressure that he felt. And it got cleared on the song. Like people heard that record was like, yeah, let's put that on the album. No, you didn't have to because you owed him nothing. You owe us all nothing. And I think that's what he realized. Like, I don't really owe anyone anything. I just want to make rap songs.
In my mind, this album is better than the last album, but maybe not as good as Forest Hills or For Your Eyes. Where do you see it in the kind of arc?
I think it's better than KOD. I do. I believe that it's just heads and shoulders better. I think it's better than For Your Eyes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Not my favorite take right now, but I do. And I say that because...
Cool. I mean, to me, that's my favorite record, but that's interesting. Talk me through that.
Well, I think that For Your Eyes was such a like high concept album that some of the songs kind of trips himself up. Like, I think trying to get people from point A to point Z with this story, it's just not Cole's greatest strength. I think his greatest strength is just rapping. I think when he's just really like going for gusto, that he is at his most compelling. Like a song like Interlude, man, like For Your Eyes only doesn't have anything that feels like that for me. So I feel like I look at certain records and they're just like the Cameron surprise. Like all the surprises and all the moments on this album, I feel like it's just going to give it legs. It has really strong legs. I think it's going to go the distance.
Do you think that it's better than Forest Hills?
No.
Okay. That's still the alpha for you.
That is still the bar. And I think because there's a concept on For Your Eyes, but also is loose enough for Cole to hit all these different pockets. He does a lot on that album, but I think by doing a lot and just having such a clear vision for what he wanted, he pulls off a lot of just like really impressive songs, just impressive records. And I want whatever the fall off is, I hope Cole remembers that great rap isn't just great rapping. It's creating great songs. It's creating like classic records that we remember forever. You know, I was thinking about All About the Benjamins when I was playing this album. I was like, man, I need you to have those records. Because if you're looking back at what was going on in New York, you can't just look at the great rap. You got to look at the great rap songs. And that's what I want from Cole, man. I want classic rap songs.
And to tie it all together, you want to talk about what happened with the South in the early to mid 2000s, New York gets bogged down in its own mythology and its own obsession with technical expertise after Puff kind of like almost like retreats a tiny bit. And it's like, okay, well, New York rap, quote unquote, that's a sound, that's an idea, that's a skill set. And then the South came along and was like, yeah, we make songs. And some of those songs are deeply lyrical and some of those songs are less lyrical. Some of them are very provocative from a cadence perspective and from a tone perspective, but from a musical perspective, the South just kind of comes up and says, yeah, okay, we're doing this. And that's what ended up becoming missing from New York for 20 years. You know, I don't know. I mean, obviously you don't want to overlook 50 Cent. You don't want to overlook everybody all the way up to Pop Smoke, but as a broad category that moved away from New York. But then to your point, it's part of Cole's legacy. So even whether he's going to do an All About the Benjamins or he's going to do something that's like an Outkast level type record, he has that in him as well in the DNA. And I think I'd be interested to hear that come out a little bit more.
Growing up just like right outside of Atlanta and seeing Outkast, I noticed that they represented what the South really meant by being like, we're outcasted, but we don't care about East Coast traditions. We were in our own world in the South. So we had our own rappers, we had our own flows, we had our own songs. And I really think songs is why the South took over. It was songs. It wasn't just rapping. It was like, we make songs and we make like Bombs Over Baghdad. You know, that's a single, but it also like, it's a great rap song. It's an impeccable rap song. But that's what Outkast did well. And I feel like they passed that on throughout the generations. And it's just so interesting that you got a J. Cole who, even though he was in the South, it's not like he was looking at little brother. He's looking at Jay-Z. So that's what I'm so fascinated by, because I'm like, okay, what does that ultimately create? Like, what kind of artist does that make when you're in the South, which is, it's lawless. Like, you can be any kind of artist in the South, but you're looking at the East Coast like, I want to be one of them. I want to be one of those rappers. I love that, because I think it's a choice. But what does that create? Like, and how his legacy ends, I think, is going to speak a lot to the artists that come after J. Cole.
The one last thing that I think we should talk about, and you allude to this in your review, and it's something that jumps out at me at various points on this record. There are, because Cole can be so focused on the structure of the lyricism that occasionally there'll be a bar in there that's a little like, I understand it fits. I understand it's a little bit of a, oh, but it's also like, you know, there's like a rap about getting misquoted on Genius. There's the rap about promo codes and Squarespace and Habitat for Humanity. You know, it's like, I interviewed someone once, and I won't say who, but who said essentially, like, every now and again, you have to say something that's like a little bit off or a little bit, dare I say, corny, because it gets people's attention. It yanks people into the moment. So there's almost something positive about doing it. Cole kind of like does that in places. And I know it kind of like makes me hiccup a little bit. And my sense is it makes you hiccup a little bit. And what's the energy of it? Do you think that it is overcompensating? Do you think it's, I mean, he made a record called Fold and Close about like middle-aged domesticity, which I strongly support. You know, like, is it just like, yo, I'm in my mid-30s and like it doesn't matter if every bar is super hard? Like, sometimes they're going to be a little bit corny, cheesy, off.
I have 2 points. One, I still look at the off season as getting in the gym, right? And just like getting the cobwebs off. So I believe some of the bars that just don't really land, it's just like Cole clearing his head, you know, but also not overthinking. I'm pretty sure some of those bars, if he would have stuck around and thought about it too much, like, he wouldn't have never made the songs. It's really interesting. Go back and watch Andre 3000's conversation with Rick Rubin, just about writing. And you can tell, like, man, Andre, when he sits down to pen these verses, he's thinking about, I got to be the best rapper ever. You can tell some of these lines, like, Cole's just having fun. He's having fun with rap. And sometimes fun rap is corny. Like, sometimes those lines are just, like, they just don't stick. But I feel like the performance of all the lines are strong. Like, he really says it like he means it. And that's what gets me. It's like, it's no corny setups. Because even, like, to me, the bars are so constructed to create these songs. He doesn't slip up over them, you know? Like, even when he does one, it's like, like, he's, boom, he's on to the next immediately. So, like, I feel like it allows the tape to have some motion. But, yeah, man, I mean, I had a conversation with a friend about how just throughout his career, J. Cole always has like a couple of bars that just don't stick. They just don't land. And they really make you like kind of cringe a bit. This one didn't really have like super cringy bars, but there was some like, you didn't have to say that. Or you didn't, like, you just didn't. Like, it wasn't necessary. It wasn't forward thinking. You just kind of like, just said it, man. And you didn't have to. But on the flip side, I think we get some moments that just, they stick. The ones that do land. So you take 100 shots, you might miss 50, but the 50 you make, I think we're impressed by.
I don't know, man. I just hit 100 for 100, so I can't really relate, but I appreciate the sentiment. Yo, Phillips, what a pleasure. Let's listen to some very raucousy stuff. Let's go out with Applying Pressure.
We off.
That's right.
Off. Applying pressure, started my grind with crime festers, and now I'm showing like they in their second trimesters. That's why I throw a shot or two online. I pay no mind to their benign gestures. But can please, I got my mind on much bigger things, to say the least. My latest speeches sound like
for part two of our Cole cast. There is a parallel narrative that is happening at the same time that the off season is clogging the Billboard charts, which is that J. Cole himself is not here. J. Cole is off playing basketball, chasing a very different dream, a very different version of himself. He is playing for the Rwanda Patriots in the Basketball Africa League. There is a long history of dialogue between hip hop and basketball, for sure. Nobody knows that dialogue better than Elena Bergeron. Elena, our very own New York Times assistant sports editor, and also just longtime occupant of the overlap of the Venn diagram between music and sports, right? True?
I'm going to say absolutely, because I maybe partially owe my sports writing career to Jay-Z. Long story, but yes.
Okay. Have you sent him flowers? Like, have you like sent him a note to thank him?
Or, I have not. You know, I'm sure one day our paths will cross and we'll talk about it and we'll laugh. He'll do the whole laugh and I'll go like the meme. I'll probably embarrass myself and it'll be great. So like, I'm just saving it for like that moment.
Okay, Jay, if you're listening, just know it's coming, that moment. So let's talk a little bit about what I think a lot of people who maybe haven't followed J. Cole for a long time would find very curious. But as someone who has followed J. Cole for quite some time, maybe shocked me, and I imagine you, a little bit less, which is, here he is, number one album in the country, all these songs in the top 10, and he is out here scoring 2 points a game with 3 assists on another continent. Can you talk a little bit about why that might not be so out of character for J. Cole? Yeah, okay, hi, this is Future John. Quick sidebar, back when we recorded this, J. Cole was playing in the Basketball Africa League. However, now he has left the league after 3 games. Didn't score that many points, didn't have that many rebounds or assists. He had gotten some criticism for taking the place of another player or another potential player. It's unclear if it was connected to that, but as of now, Future John, Future Popcast, J. Cole has left the league and has returned to just being the number one current rapper in the country.
Basketball has been so closely tied with his career, not just in terms of lyrics, but I think in terms of like being sort of an insider to basketball culture, which is a nuanced thing, but it's sort of a difference, right? Like you realize like with Friday Night Lights is your mixtape and, you know, just holding the basketball on the cover of that and, you know, figuring out what that was going to be like. Like, I think he's sort of a person who, and a rapper in particular, who's endeared themselves to the basketball community through a lot of the themes that he talks about.
We don't want to forget he played high school ball.
Right.
He walked on at St. John's. Like, he, you know,
yes,
it's not a total left field for him to try to like tie this all back together. Before we get too deep into it, I don't want to forget to mention that he actually was a hooper before he was a rapper, or, you know, at the same time that he was learning to be a rapper.
St. John's is a legendary program. So the idea that like he could hold his own in a walk-on is like a big deal. It's not like he went to some podunk school and like, you know, tried to get on the team and they were like, I guess we need to fill out this roster. It's a better basketball school than Davidson was when Steph Curry was there. You know what I mean?
Whoa,
like, no, and it's no shots. It's what I'm saying is that like in terms of like when you think about the validity of like his being able to play basketball and have a hoop dream, it is not a far-flung dream. Davidson people, please don't get mad at me because you know I love you. I was there for Steph's run. It was amazing. But like I think even the Davidson community would acknowledge that like they didn't have a Lou Carnaseca. You know what I mean? Like Chris Mullin didn't go to Davidson. It's a different basketball pedigree. It's all I'm saying.
I just want to say to any people who attended and or graduated from Davidson who are fans of Popcast, the opinions of Elena Bergeron do not represent the opinions of Popcast or the New York Times. We think your school's phenomenal. Thank you so much. Please keep
going. if more really good basketball players want to go to liberal arts colleges, I'm super in favor of that.
Totally fair.
I like it. I'm like, let's get nutty. You know, let's study humanities and, you know, get these triple doubles.
Triple-double in the library and in the gym. So given all that context with Cole, and he's been sort of loosely hinting at something like this for a while, and even when I wrote a feature on him, I want to say in 2016, look, not that a person playing pickup rec league basketball is a guaranteed symbol that they're going to try to like have a tryout for a pro league. But it was very much, I think, on his mind back then. He wanted to be very good at playing basketball and was willing to do it on a very small scale and with the local guys. And if that's what it took, then that's what he would do. Is it a bold choice for him to go and play in this new league, or is it more like, of course, Cole would do this at this point while he's got the number one album in the country?
I think it's a bold choice for him to go and play in this particular league, because I think, like, you and I have kind of talked about the parallel, right? Like, you mentioned the fact that he's been sort of like tinkering with basketball. I won't even say tinkering, because I want to give it more credit than that. He's been building his basketball game in addition to pursuing a rap career for a long time. A year ago, the Pistons kind of tweeted that they would extend him, you know, an invite to try out.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Right. And Cole mentioned that, you know, he had been talking to Master P about like what the journey was like when Master P tried out for the Hornets. I think he also had a tryout for the Mavericks and, you know, played in the preseason game for the Raptors. So like if he was going to consult with anybody, Master P is the person to do it. But like the boldness from Cole comes from the fact that P went the NBA route, right? And there will always be conjecture about whether they gave him those shots because they wanted the publicity or because he earned them. And so like Cole has done like an interesting thing by going to a league that would totally benefit from, you know, his celebrity and from the publicity that he brings to playing basketball in Rwanda for sure, rather than, you know, taking the alley-oop, to try out for like a G League team or try out for an NBA team. And so like it's fascinating that he has used his celebrity to bring a spotlight to a league that, like, did you know it existed last week? I did not. Overall, when we talk about bringing publicity or bringing TV time to this basketball league, that can be beneficial to the other rank and file players in that league in different ways, right? Like, if Cole plays, do salaries go up? You know, like, do you also get maybe another look from an NBA team or at a different league because people are there to see Cole? I don't know. Maybe there might be some benefit.
Yeah. Or just in general, does the league get more publicity, more attention, more press coverage, more television coverage, which in turn leads to better advertising deals, better revenue deals, which in turn leads to a more stable league long term? Totally possible. We have talked about Master P a couple times. We have to play Make Him Say right now.
Make Him Say I'm the current order. Today, y'all have the big things. We have the big bang.
Is Master P the kind of like apex of rappers who ball? I feel like he is. And this video, I mean, first of all, if anybody has a line on one of the No Limit basketball jerseys that was worn in this video, like, please, like, please, like, bang me at popcastnytimes.com or hit me on Instagram, please. Like, I'd like to have a conversation with you.
A conversation. I would like to make it a jersey dress. Thank you.
Fair.
I'm bringing those back.
Fair. Absolutely. It's going to be serious post-COVID energy in a jersey dress summer 2021. When Master P was doing this, you know, at the time, I remember it was viewed with skepticism, but then he was so kind of diligent and behind the scenes in certain sections of trying to make it happen. Like, he really wanted to make the dream happen. What is your recollection of the Master P trying for the NBA era?
That was just like, oh my God, Master P could do anything. You know what I mean? Like, and first of all, I should say this because I just saw it on my timeline this morning. This is Dr. Percy Miller now, because that man just got a doctorate.
Did he get an honorary doctorate?
No, it's not honorary.
It's not?
He went to Lincoln and he earned a doctorate, apparently. And so kudos, I'm going to call him Dr. P.
Dr. P, phenomenal.
Exactly. But I mean, like, that was an era that, number one, like, it sort of like took the top of the roof off of your brain and went, oh my God, like, that is a thing that's possible, right? Because like, as a person who is from New Orleans, the idea that not only did P's music blow up, all of No Limit's music blew up, and they had this amazing deal with Priority where, you know, they had so much ownership. They were super rich. He was on Cribs with a gold roof. You know what I mean? Like, anything is possible. Master P could have a video with Shaq on the sidelines and a platinum tank on the court and a flying gorilla, and you just have to deal with it. Because guess what? That's what's happening. Okay, I don't know why or how. I'm here for it.
Also, who is the oil painter who painted those portraits that were in Master P's house? Who's that person? Let's get that person in the Whitney. You know what I mean? Like, let's get that person in MoMA. Okay, just throwing that out there. Those are the things I would like information on.
Thank you. But yeah, like to continue that thought, it was like, okay, so that could happen. Okay, you know, like Master P could be on BET and MTV every 20 seconds. That could happen. So like the basketball career felt like, I don't know, he might could do it.
Was he good? He's kinda old. Was he good?
He was good, and the rap on P. Wright is that, like, he had – sorry, that was a terrible
pun. That is okay. I was going to let it slide.
The scouting report on P. was always that, like, he played basketball in high school. He was very good. He went to community college, but not for a torn ACL. Like, he might have naturally tried out for the NBA and made a career of it, you know, and just circumvented rap in general. So like, you know, P's tall, P's athletic, like there's no reason why like that is in, you know, an unacceptable mythology. It seems totally rational. And, you know, again, like there are a lot of people his size who nurture hoop dreams. And so like, why not? Why wouldn't that have happened? But like when he got to that point, I think that he had been working out with a couple people, and P sort of used to do the thing on the road that I guess like Drake does now, which is like basically take basketball courts with him and like make 5-on-5 a part of like their day-to-day workout on tours and stuff like that. I think like, you know, Obama did pretty much the same thing. It's a thing. People play basketball for fun. But I think that like when you're intentional about it, as he was, like he sort of set aside rap for a second and said, I'm going to work out and try to get back into basketball shape, which is a thing you totally have to do if it's 1999 and you don't have an ACL, right? Because like that surgery then.
At his peak. This is right. This is not like P on the decline.
Before all this, he had workouts with the Dallas Mavericks. And in fact, like Brooklyn Nets coach Steve Nash was the guy that was like showing him around the facility and like testing him out. And then, you know, P had some preseason run with the Hornets, who had signed him to, I think, a couple of like 10-day contracts or whatever. And so the funniest part of that, though, is like the hindsight backstory and like hearing the anecdotes about what those workouts were like. And like, shout out to Thomas Golianopoulos, because I think he wrote the oral history of those tryouts.
Yo, shout out Tom G.
Yeah. P has a very different version of what happened in those. He contends that, like, he killed Muggsy Bogues, you know, he probably gave Matt Barnes a broken nose, you know, he was like the tough physical dude, physical guard who could push anybody off the ball and like had some handle and could shoot a little bit. So like gave you a variety of things in the backcourt that might be beneficial to an NBA team. So the Hornets at that time were kind of in a weird space as well, though, because their owner had been accused of sexual assault criminally and civilly. And so there was some thinking that the owner was trying to repair his relationship with Charlotte's Black community by extending this invite, which, you know, if you ask one set of people, they'll say, well, that's why. And if you ask another set of people, it's like, well, no, Master P was totally legit. Like, he held his own and he played in games. And like I said, his size was such a huge factor at the time, because P's, I want to say like 6'4", 6'5". And, you know, to have that in the backcourt is a good thing.
I'll take your word for it. I don't speak this language at all.
I love sports blogger John Gehrman.
Yes. Talk about a 10-day contract. Jeez. No renew. Definitely. He goes on to play in the CBA and the ABA for a little while. And I will say the thing that I was struck by during the P basketball run, and I has been kind of like resurfaced for me during this J. Cole thing, is we historically tend to think of like successful musicians, certainly rappers, being on top of the world, having access to whatever they want. You know, it's like that's the ne plus ultra of places you could be, is to be a top-selling rapper. What else could you possibly want? But it turns out, quite a bit, you could actually want something entirely different. And one of the key tensions throughout Cole's career is I'm getting success. It's not what I want it to look like. And so I'm going to reject it. Cole is someone who's been like playing out this process within the confines of his hip hop career for a decade now. So that's why it's not totally shocking that at this moment where he is, I don't know if he's at his peak or maybe just after his peak, but he's like, you know, he's still debuting at the top of the Billboard charts, still very relevant, still very sharp. It didn't surprise me to find out that he wanted to take all this free energy and time and go put it into something that other people might view as curious or quixotic.
I think it depends on what you're going to do with that. Like, first of all, the primary thing it seems from J. Cole's experience is that like he wants the personal validation of knowing how good could I have been at that sport. It's certainly something that like he's documented in the rollouts of this album. I think like when you and I first started talking about this, the thing I was still trying to wrap my mind around was like not just the on court, like is he good part of it. It was sort of like, man, he's really using the sports and in particular the basketball like machinery as a rollout, which is, I think, like a marketing thing that like I've never really seen from an artist, right? Like there are all these people who have played, rappers who have played basketball players who want to rap, but like there is very rarely like this legitimacy of like this person is so entrenched in the basketball community that we're going to fire up all the levers, right? So like as soon as all of this album rollout got going, you saw a letter on Players Tribune. Like, what? Like, that's where Kevin Durant said he was going to the Warriors. That's not a place where rappers talk about their albums. But like, yeah, because he was going to talk about like why he was making this decision to pursue basketball. Like, J. Cole has a shoe deal that's mostly based around like not really a lifestyle shoe. Like, that's almost a Hooper shoe. And again, like as soon as the album came out, you see the Wizards tweeting the lyrics to it. It samples, you know, Damian Lillard's post-game speech. So you have all of these things that are like, oh, so people are going to talk about your album on SportsCenter, and people are going to talk about your album on NBA on TNT, and like NBA Twitter is going to get behind this in a way that like, it's not just like a passing mention of if the album is good or not. It's like, this gives all the sports outlets and myself included a platform to now go, let's talk about rap.
Which is obviously part of it anyway. I mean, it's not like it's a big leap. Also, as a quick sidebar, I don't want to overlook the sometimes forgotten and occasionally maligned J. Cole Bally Boot collaboration from about 5 or 6 years ago. Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to lose sight of the lifestyle thing, which I almost bought at the Bally outlet at Woodbury Common, but they didn't have my size.
Wow.
But I'm just saying, I don't want to forget, you know, we're talking about J. Cole in the athletic space. Let's not forget the golden moments of J. Cole in the lifestyle space. Like, let's just, you know, want to honor them. So that's interesting that you're right. Like the basketball discourse, the sports Twitter discourse, the sports center discourse, that's actually maybe a more natural promotional vehicle for J. Cole at this point than hip hop media. Not that hip hop media is not showing up, but maybe it's either more natural or a better amplifier, you think?
I think at this point, it is probably a better amplifier, yes. I think that, you know, you and I have watched changes in hip-hop media and the amount of audience that they are able to reach consistently has, I think, diminished over time just because some of, like, the vaunted pillars of hip-hop media have been bought and sold and maybe run in ways that like don't necessarily help their cause. And so like I think that like if you were doing a rollout, you could do worse than, you know, doing a sports rollout.
So given that, let's talk briefly about this kind of other side of the reciprocity between hip hop and basketball, which is as much as rappers want to play hoop, basketball players want to rap. And, you know, whether it was Allen Iverson or Kobe or Shaq, Dame Lillard, I'm sure there's literally dozens, perhaps. There was that compilation. Remember that compilation that came out kind of like maybe in the mid to late 90s that was like all basketball players collaborating with rappers? I can't remember what the name of it was, but I feel like I had that on vinyl.
I feel like that was probably a coaster for me. I tend to reject those kind of like out of hand. I'm not going to lie to you. Like it's got to be like a very high bar to sort of for me to let it into my consciousness, because there's just too much bad basketball rap.
Just because someone is like at the peak of their career, a success by all objective metrics, it does not mean that they do not have a little hole in their heart or their soul, and that needs to be filled by giving it a try. These songs are, in essence, the Michael Jordan playing baseball of rap songs. That's how it feels.
Or MC Hammer trying out for the Oakland A's.
Wow, or true. Former ball boy turned attempted tryout. Not unsuccessful, but still, shout out MC Hammer, who's now richer than all of us as a tech investor, it seems.
Precisely. Please don't hit me with no cryptocurrency raps. Sorry, that's a PSA.
Sorry about that noise. My crypto miner is making a lot of background. Sorry about that. I'll try to turn that off.
Amazing. But yeah, like Marvin Gaye tried out for the Lions. Like that's a thing that happened. So there's this long history, basically, of like people feeling like, you know, I'm good at this, but like, you know, it's similar to Justin Bieber, you know, and his Maple Leafs fandom. That dude was, you know, getting hockey lessons on an ice rink in Central Park a couple years back. Like there is this thing where people want to use the other side of their brain and or body to explore a career that they feel like there is a very finite window for. So shout out to everybody chasing that dream.
Do you want to go out with any song by an athlete rapping?
Ooh.
And if the answer is Allen Iverson Jules, that's an acceptable answer. But if it's not that, I'm open to anything.
Oh, this is so hard because I have so many things in my heart. But I'm going to hit you with this one. I would like to go out to Nas's Blunt Ashes, which was produced by Chris Weather.
Wow. Strong curve. Elena Bergeron, always a joy.
Take care, guys.
That is our show. Thank you to Yo Phillips. Thank you to Elena Bergeron. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com, if you have any athletes making music moments you'd like to share, or get on the Facebook group and chat about it. You can subscribe to podcast anywhere you get your audio content. Spotify, Google Play, Apple, et cetera, et cetera. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We will be back next week. Here is Nas's Blunt Ashes from Hip Hop is Dead.
Blunt ash falls into the ashtray. I could see my whole life fly past me. Did I keep it gangster or keep it classy? And will the money get fame outlast me? The blunt's ass fall down in the ashtray. Will I see my whole